My name is Bilal Flomer, and I've been a member here of the Muslim community since 1974. I work as a nursing assistant, home health aide, but I work in transportation at the hospital now. So I move people around all day to wherever they need to go, from labor and delivery to the morgue. So I'm pretty, I'm involved. Okay. I'll start right from my birth, which took place in Bakersfield, California, 1947. And, my dad met my mother out there. She's from Minnesota. That's the Minnesota connection. My dad's from Brooklyn, New York. And, so after the war, he went to work for Santa Fe. They met in Barstow, California. They got married. And then, as a result of that, I was born in August of 47 in Bakersfield, California. Well, anyhow, Santa Fe was just converting from steam to diesel. And so my dad, as a result of that conversion, was laid off from Santa Fe, so we wound up going back to Brooklyn. We ultimately resided in Queens, which we resided actually right on the Brooklyn-Queens border. And so that's where I was raised for the first 15 years of my life. And, New York actually had a pretty big impact on me because I went to Catholic schools. I was put in Catholic schools. I had a little stint every now and then in public schools, but I always wound up getting put back into Catholic schools. I think my folks are trying to protect my brothers and I, and my one sister, from juvenile delinquency. And that played out well, ultimately. But anyhow, for the first 15 years, I was raised in Catholic school. And by the way, the Catholic school actually was the thing that kind of set me on the path, so to speak, to understand God-fearing religion. Although, it was from the Christian perspective. But still, that was the thing that really inspired me to move on, with my investigations, and which kept me basically on the path. Because although, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they have very dissimilar things. However, there are some very familiar and similar things about them. Of course, all professing the belief in the one supreme being, So, anyhow, the first 15 years were very valuable there. And then, of course, New York City being a place where, this is a major city, not only in the United States, but internationally. And, of course, there's a lot of different venues, a lot of different things going on there. And a lot of the cinema, and especially the entertainment business, which ultimately I wound up getting involved in later years. But the cinema, they were always big on religious epics, especially in the 40s, a lot in the 50s, and somewhat in the 60s. So I was attracted to those, too. And I mentioned juvenile delinquency earlier, and my mother, being from Minnesota, was fearful that my slightly younger brother and I were heading towards a career in juvenile delinquency. So she felt that moving to Minnesota would maybe help take us off that path, and maybe it did. I think she saw the light there. So in May of 62, we moved to Minnesota. And this was where I wound up getting, put into the public school systems, because in northern Minnesota, where I had actually wound up, for a few years, there really weren't any religious schools there, although there were like CYO groups, Catholic Youth Organizations, and, other Christian type of things. Anyhow, Minnesota, I wound up in the public school systems, which caused me to still keep my connection and I was a churchgoer. Every Sunday I went to church, although my mind was more on music than it was on what was going on in the church. But I still kept that connection, and some of the moral issues, which I had learned as a kid in the Catholic schools, was still with me, although, you know, experimentation certainly was there in a lot of different areas, you know. And so it wasn't until the late 60s when I moved to Minneapolis and got more involved in the entertainment business where I actually started running into Muslims or people who had been associated with Islam. They might not necessarily have been practicing. I was in the entertainment business as a musician for a quarter of a century. So you might say, well, how'd you actually get to become a Muslim? What actually brought you to Islam? And in Minneapolis, we used to frequent some clubs. And this was the setting where one night I actually bumped into a woman who came from a Muslim family, although they weren't practicing Islam, but they still had the love of Islam and in their hearts, although, like I said, they weren't practicing. So this is my first introduction to Islam, or the start of it. But the thing is that I met this woman who was from a non-practicing Muslim family one night, and I said, well, let's get together sometime and talk about your religion. I'd like to know a little more about it. And so one night I invited her over. The intention was, you know, just to have some social drinks or whatever, but, you know, eventually that just fell to the wayside because this conversation that we had went something like this. So what is Islam again? Well, you know, it's the belief of one God. Well, I believe in one God. No, you don't. What do you mean? Well, you believe in the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, she said. Well, what's the matter with that? She says, well, that's not belief in the one God. Do you have something I can read? So her mother sent over the soft cover of Muhammad Marmaduke Pickthall. He's a Britisher who had embraced Islam, married an Indian woman, ultimately became an Islamic scholar and very fluent in Arabic and the whole bit. And she also sent over Inquiries on Islam, which was a dialogue between a scientist and a Shiite Imam from Detroit, Muhammad Shedri, I think his name is. The point being is that for me, I had never been really confronted with anything other than these various forms of Christianity. So what had happened was is that this was my first exposure to Islam. And so I had to do some research because, I mean, this is very similar, supreme being, but you're saying that the ones that I believe in are part of the equation. Okay, I want to read some. So I got both of these books and I'm looking at it and I'm studying these. And it took me about 3.5 years to come to grips with this because, see, I'm traveling around the five-state area in Canada. I went to California back for some business and in the music business. And then I came back in 74. And I had gone through a couple of changes. I got sick with mononucleosis, and this really caused me to really take a look at my situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had been reading the soft cover of Pickthall's Quran, a translation of Quran. I was reading a lot of different things, or, you know, I mean, I had no one else to instruct me, the woman who I had met, you know, she didn't know a whole lot, you know, so I'm eventually finding a need more to understand more of this. And then I'm seeing also that the music business is kind of like a catalyst to not so good behavior, or it's keeping me, it was kind of like pulling me this way, and I want to go this way. So the tug of war got to the point where And including my background, where I decided to look at here. If I'm going to go anywhere with this, you know, I really need to meet Muslims. And because what had happened was, by 1974, the spring of 74, I decided I want to be a Muslim. I don't know how to do this or what, but this is what I want. This is where I want to be. I came to grips with the fact that, yeah, wait a minute, you know, father, son, who's the grandmother, who's the grandfather? He's got to have other family too. Now, this doesn't make any sense. So finally, I came to the conclusion that, hey, wait a minute. Well, I didn't get to the Muslim community. What happened was I embraced Islam just by myself. I said, oh, Allah, I want to become a Muslim. I don't know how to do this, but I want to become a Muslim. So I figured, okay, then, the woman who I had met told me that you should pray five times a day. Well, how do you do that? Well, she wasn't actually sure. I said, well. So I went to, you know, bookstores, and I found this book written by a Christian, and it kind of described the prayer in English, so that's how I prayed. I used to pray all my prayers in English, and in whatever pictures I could find on how to formulate the prayer. I was praying a salat. You know, most people would say that's an ovation right from the get-go, but I didn't know what I was doing. So finally by August of 78, and this is 1 year before I got out of the business, I was telling her, I says, look at here, I have to learn how to pray. I know this isn't right, you know. So I wound up coming here, this masjid here, and they weren't praying Juma here in 1978. They were meeting at Columbia Heights. They were meeting here on Friday nights. The structure says that Najati Abu Carter brought this place, I think, in 75, and I think the Muslim community started coming here once a week. And Juma had not been established here. It had been established at Kauffman Union. It had been established at Masjid Mujaddid, which was a Bilalian masjid, and then a couple of other little masalas that were, and this is a handful of them. McAllister College had it. Hamlet University had it, they had UM over there. But anyhow, the community was extremely small. Anyway, so I finally couldn't take it anymore, and I said to this lady, we had been living together, we weren't married at this point, but we had been living together for quite a few years. And I says, look, I gotta get to the mosque. I gotta get there, I gotta find out what's the right way to do things. And I didn't know a stitch in Arabic, nothing. And she said, well, you know that professor that you call up to find out when Ramadan, because I always used to call the University of Minnesota to get a hold of Khalid Sami, who was a anesthesiologist over there. And I don't know what he thought, but every time Ramadan would start, beginning in 74, I always used to call up over there. Somehow we got his number, and I'd ask him, when does the fast start? Because I want to fast, right? And I don't know what he thought. Eventually, we talked about it when I finally met him, you know, about 4 or 5 years later. And then I told him I was the guy that kept on calling you up to find out when the fast would start. So, you know, I would do the fast and as best I could, you know. I fasted for 30 days. I didn't know anything about the Eids. I just would fast for 30 days. Well, the fast starts here, and then I would just knock off 30 days, and that was it. You know, I didn't know nothing about the Eids. So anyhow, 78, August of 78, I come here, I meet the people on a Friday night, and I had met Sheikh Rafat Hager, and he was the imam here at the time, or religious chair at the time, and he invited me over to his house, so they started teaching me short surahs, you know, like Ikhlas or Kauthar or something like that, and we would talk about Islam and things like that. But I'm still in the music business, so, you know, all of a sudden I go back on the road again, you know, perform wherever. But it was reaching a point where I was saying, look, I can't be here anymore, because at the time we were stuck in the bar and ballroom circuit. We're doing dance material. The people are drinking. They're womanizing out in front of me. I'm providing the song. They're out there dancing and doing this, that, and the other thing. But there was one thing that drove me out of the business. It was a horrible experience I had seen one night. We were playing up on the Iron Range up in Eveleth. There was a big club up there. And they had this situation in the bars where they have these specials, you know. Well, anyhow, these people had come to drink these two-for-ones. And a couple of guys had left the bar where we were performing at, and they had run, they had been broadsided by a semi. They were killed on the spot, out on the, right off the frontage road out there. So I'd gone out there after a break, and I saw all these flashing lights and stuff out there, and I'm looking up in the road, and that must have been a bad one up there. What happened? The guy says, well, a couple of guys left this bar, you know, the club here, and they got broadsided by the semi. They were killed instantly out there. And so I started really thinking about that. Yeah, they were listening to my music. And so, you know, and that had a bad impact on me. Really, that stuck with me for about another year, to the point where I just told my brother, and I said, look, I can't be here anymore. I can't be doing this anymore. Just, you know, I'm the catalyst to this. So they can womanize and proposition each other and drink and get killed out on the highway. I can't do this no more. So in April of 79, I got out. I walked off stage. I performed my last job up in Hibbing, and that was the end. And so then that pretty much put me in line with the community here. By that time, Juma still wasn't established, and they had changed it from Friday night here to Sunday afternoons, Zor. So I started coming here. And Zohar, and on Sundays, and didn't have a car at the time, so I was living over in Golden Valley, so I used to take a couple of buses, and then, you know, just eventually get here and start meeting the brothers and sisters. There wasn't a whole lot of Islamic shops like you have now, like these nice Somali malls that you have all over the place, and all these shops, and go to Islamic Center or wherever, you can buy anything, and now you can get anything. Halal meat. There was nothing, absolutely nothing, 1979, 80, 81, stuff like that, except the Siddiqui brothers, Murtaza and Mustafa. They finally decided to go into business, so they developed this shop entitled Taj Mahal. And there they had halal meat. But Mustafa and Murtaza, they would go to Linden Felser, and they would halal the meat out there. Then they would bring it and sell it in Taj Mahal, right over here in New Brighton, behind the Cub Food over there off Silver Lake Road. That's what their shop was. So eventually we were able to get halal meat. At the time, that was it. The only time you could really get anything was if you went to a convention.
What about your involvement with the Muslim community?
The Muslim community, generally, you know, Allah has been very good to me. You know, I'll tell you, 1986 came around. They needed a caretaker here, so, you know, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, so I, you know, wound up taking over the caretakership here and... in August of 86. I worked in that capacity right up until, let's say, January of, was this 10? Up until January of 2009, and then I took on a lesser role here, and Bassett took over here as the janitor in 2009, and then I started just doing just a few other simpler things here. And then I also, in March of 86, I had been interested in working in a funeral service, and Brother Rafat, who was the imam at the time and also one in charge of taking care of the Islamic funerals, I had asked him, I says, well, look, at whenever you need some help, let me know, I'll learn from you. And in March of 86, I actually started working with him and going to, washing, preparing the bodies and the mayat and taking them to the cemetery and so on and so forth. And I took over after about a year later in 87 solely. And, so we were using various funeral services around the Twin Cities until it got so expensive. We built our own lab here in 94, which is right here. I've been working with them since, the only thing I'm doing right now is just filling in every now and then, helping Abdullah with some of the cases, because we're trying to train younger people, newer people to get involved, and then I build the burial trays for Maplewood and Columbia Heights. I had been doing it down in Burnsville also, and like I said, so it's been about 25 years that I've been working with them. And so that's what's been keeping me busy.